Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is John Marchando, and welcome to another edition of the Two Guys in a PLC podcast. I'm joined by my colleague,
Dave Gutshall. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all. Just a reminder for those of you who have not listened to us before, everything that we say today is for entertainment purposes only, and all of our opinions are our own, not reflective of the day job, spouses, first girlfriend, boyfriend, partners, old flames, plants, alligators. Did I miss anybody, John?
Yeah. I never know what you're going to say here, so I'm always waiting for the, what can I jump in on? Because it always changes, you know, that last part always changes. I love it. So, man, we have got an awesome guest today, Dave. I think we feel kind of like we're not worthy of, having this gentleman on.
Right?
So, I mean, crazy, right?
I'm telling you, I was surprised that, maybe not surprised, the wrong word. I was just maybe shocked that he agreed to be on today. So hopefully we can... Yeah, hopefully the discussion is as, you know, entertaining and as useful. And man, I hope I learned something today, right?
Yeah, really.
I'm telling you. Yeah. So let's turn it over. So, Mr. Gary Workman, how are you, sir?
Oh, doing just fine.
Outstanding.
Gary, well, great here in Michigan.
Yeah, you're closer to John than I am. Close.
Pretty warm on the west side. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just a little bit. I was starting to think that. I changed positions with someplace on the equator. Holy heck, that was ridiculous.
And this doesn't get published till November.
Yeah, that's
going
right.
to sound a
Happy
little
Thanksgiving,
strange.
Right?
Happy Thanksgiving, that's yeah. right. Yeah, we have a couple of those from before. So, Gary, why don't you spend 30 to 60 seconds and just tell everybody who you are, a little bit of background.
Wow. Okay, I'm an old retiree. What do they call those? The one of the gray beards from I think some of your previous podcasts.
Yeah, I resemble some of that. So yeah.
Well, I spent 48 years with General Motors. Fresh out of high school, went to General Motors Institute. One of the unusual things is I graduated with a master's degree from Purdue before I got my bachelor's degree from General Motors Institute.
Oh wow!
I was on a bachelor-master program there, and that was a little bit unusual. A few years in an energy conservation group, then I got an opportunity that was just wonderful to attend Harvard Business School on a GM fellowship. Came back and started my networking career. I worked my way up to becoming the chief map architect in the 1980s, learned an awful lot about system networking.
Wow.
I haven't talked about map in a long time.
No, right? Haven't talked about map in an awful long time. And then in the late 90s, I was given the opportunity to investigate the use of Ethernet for real-time control. And I was given that opportunity because in the 80s with a map program, I would travel around the world saying, whatever the hell you do, don't use Ethernet for your control system networks. Ethernet is a probabilistic network. So by the late 90s, switched Ethernet had come around.
Yep.
And Ethernet had changed a lot. And so I changed my tune to, hey, it's not your father's Ethernet, drawing upon the Oldsmobile commercial of the time. And so I became like a reform smoker when it came to Ethernet was going around to, hey, if you haven't looked at Ethernet for your control system network, you're really missing out on something here. And it was just amazing because within the company, I'd keep running into people who knew me from before and would sit there and tell me they would repeat. The presentations I made 10
the
years
verbiage,
ago.
Yep.
And
yep,
I got to eat over my dead body. And my reaction was, geez, I'm sorry to hear you're going to pass away so soon.
So, Gary, what year was that approximately?
That was in the late 90s. By 1997, I had done some studies that showed that Ethernet outperformed all of the control system networks that we were using at the time. Now, that was an isolated Ethernet, But by 2001, we were running our first production implementations of an Ethernet IP network. So in the late 90s, we were comparing the speeds of different possible options. We made the determination that Profinet and Ethernet IP were virtually identical in their performance output, despite what the Profinet people claim. And we went with Ethernet IP primarily on my recommendation because it had the ability to route control system traffic in a unicast fashion. And for the next 17 years, I was implementing Ethernet IP throughout the corporation. It became the standard first in North America and then globally. We installed it particularly with some industrial Ethernet switches that was interesting to run. And then I retired in 2017. When COVID came about, I got the opportunity to co-write a book about Ethernet IP networks and talking about how to properly architect them. So I captured most of what I learned in that 15-year career of installing networks in a book available from Amazon. I don't know if I'm allowed to promote it like that, but
go for it. No, go for it. Go for it. All good.
The Everyman's Guide to Properly Architecting Ethernet IP Networks, available from Amazon.com. You can avoid paying the price because they let you preview the first chapter. And if you read the first chapter, you'll get 90% of the value of the book just by reading the table of contents. Because it tells you what the key recommendations are. But if you want to hear about some of the internal discussions and the ITOT culture gap, at least in one major corporation, you might want to pick up the book and read the Gary's View sections where I pass along some...
Awesome. Totally love it, Gary. My goodness.
Some stories about fighting with IT.
Yeah.
And so you wrote this with John Rinaldi, right?
I did write. It is co-written with John Rinaldi.
Okay.
And
awesome.
Interesting story there that whenever I met John Rinaldi, I was at an OPC seminar and I saw someone walking around with a book called The Everyman's Guide to Ethernet IP. I'm sitting there, I know a little bit about that. I want to read that, see if it's worth letting people know about. Went up to the gentleman who was carrying this book, and he said, I don't know, I haven't read it yet, but go out in the lobby, and there at the real-time automation booth, you can meet a guy who's handing these books out. And I went out there, and I didn't see the book on the table. And so I asked the man, and he happened to be John Rinaldi, and he said, who are you? And I told him I work for General Motors. I've heard of you. I'd only have a couple copies left, but if you promise that you will write a review on Amazon, I will go give you one of those copies for you to read. And hey, for a free book, I'm a cheapskate. Picked up the book, read it that night. I mean, took it home, read it cover to cover, like 2 a.m. I'm appalled. I could not believe it. This book did not have the first thing I learned about Ethernet networks for controls. In retrospect, it wasn't a bad book about the Ethernet IP spec, but it was written from a supplier's point of view. Here's how you create an Ethernet IP node. What I was with the users with General Motors is I was installing Ethernet IP networks. And so it's how you put together all these nodes from all the different companies to interop and perform a useful function. And they didn't talk at all. It called itself the Everyman's Guide.
Yeah.
And it didn't have the first thing about whatever you do, don't have any collisions on your Ethernet IP network. It never even mentioned that. And so I wrote a scathing review. I mean, it was, but I emailed it to John. I said, if you made me promise I would write a review. This is a review. I will post it on Amazon if you insist that I do so. But please, I don't think you'd appreciate it. And I got a phone call like the very next day. Oh, you can hold off on your review. Let's talk about this. And he came to town and we talked about it. And he said, okay, I see you have a different perspective. Yeah. why don't you write a chapter and I'll write an amendment? And so I spent a month trying to write a chapter to modify that book. And it took more than a chapter to write. And also the whole premise was, you know, it wasn't building an individual node. It was getting an interoperable network. And I just came back to John and said, John, I'm sorry. I'm not so negative on your book. It's not bad describing the specification per se. It doesn't help the users. It's not an everyman's guide. And he goes, well, then we're just going to have to write another book. And so we did.
Cool.
And it was a wonderful experience. And it's one of the things I'm most proud of now, having captured probably 15 years of learning and the evolution of Ethernet and Ethernet for control system networks in particular.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, so I got to be honest with you, Gary, as you're running through kind of all of this history, I'm coming up with more questions than we possibly have time for to get to on this podcast.
Which means time for a second podcast.
That's exactly right. We'll have to schedule another one at some point. But I want to go back to something you brought up kind of earlier on, especially because you've seen this evolution for, you know, since its early days, and everybody calls it something different. It's mentioned in some type of context. I feel like somebody the other day said it's old and tired. Everybody knows it. And that's this concept of converging the organizations or converging the technology parts of IT and OT. So when I say IT and IT OT convergence to you, I'm not calling out people or process. Gary, what does that, like, what did you do? What made it work? Where did you run into problems? Just start downloading on that a little bit.
Or did it ever work, right?
Or did it ever work?
Let's start with the idea of IT OT convergence. I mean, I first heard that term probably about 15 years ago. And it certainly seemed to come out from, I believe it was Cisco that was promoting the idea. And it was IT-OT technology convergence. And I remember it so well because I'd never heard the acronym OT before. OT in my industry was overtime. OT convergence doesn't make any sense at all. And then it was, I'm a little skeptical. I'm a little skeptical because there's only one IT department, and there's an executive vice president in charge of IT. Try and find an executive vice president or a vice president of OT. You won't find it. There's just so many different OTs. In the automotive industry, I mean, there was facilities. There was the press group. There was the paint group. There was the robotic automation group. I mean, there's all these different, there was the material handling and shipping and logistics and whatnot. There's a variety of OT departments.
Yeah, which part of production are you talking about? Yep.
And which one are you talking about? Because they have different control system networks. And primarily, I was working much more with our powertrain division. And our powertrain division also had an industrial Ethernet strategy, much as we did.
I was involved in automotive assembly.
But they were going about it differently than we were. And we were looking at technology, and we had an executive director that was coming up with a control system philosophy, a control system strategy, where we were trying to get away from the usual way of procuring things. He was saying, technology is evolving so rapidly, let's try and freeze technology so that we can make plants identical, four or five plants identical, because the technology curve is so rapid, you'd put in a plant, then the next plant you'd put in, you'd use a different technology. Then the next plant you'd put in is a different technology. And if you recall back in the 80s and 90s, GM had multiple different vehicle divisions, and each division had their own control system philosophy. And so what we were doing was trying to come up with a control system strategy that was useful and appropriate across all the various vehicle divisions and whatnot. And so
you're talking about like CPC, BOC,
yep,
those kinds of, okay.
Exactly, yep. Exactly. Small car, medium car, large car, truck, Saturn. each had their own control system philosophy. So our executive director, he put together he got the primary control system engineers from each division, got us all in a room, says, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. You have 5 different ways of manufacturing a vehicle, and they all work. I want you engineers to agree on the way we are going to manufacture our vehicles, the control system architecture for all our vehicles, or I'm going to choose one of the 5 that I know that works, and I'm going to impose it on everyone else. So have at it, gentlemen.
Wow.
And gave us like 3 months to come up with it. And I was the person coming from the staffs that was there in terms of network support. So I was coming up with the networking architecture strategy. And we came up with, you have device-level networks. You have control-level networks. You have the information technology networks. And there's a different technology for all of those. Well, the thing we were dealing with was 10 different device-level networks. People were using Profibus. People were using Interbus S. People were using DeviceNet. It was amazing. And so we stopped and got everyone in the room, all discussed, all debate. It took probably 6 months that we came up with the thing that made most sense for General Motors, as well as General Motors suppliers, because we interviewed all our suppliers as well, was that we support DeviceNet. And so then we started, every division was going to start using DeviceNet. Well, that decision alone took 6 months. This is too damn long. We want a whole yep. control system architecture. Uh-huh. And so they merged the control system groups together, and we came up with a global, well, it was North American initially, common controls architecture. Then we compared and contrasted and went over and discussed and debated it with our Opel division in Europe, and finally came up with a global strategy, agreeing on span of it was the functional needs that we were going to implement and whatnot, and the functionality. When it came down to technologies, we chose ControlNet for the control level networks, DeviceNet for the device level networks, Ethernet for the IT networks. All well and good. I mean, Ethernet was everywhere. And the question came about, do we really need 3 different technologies? Can we push DeviceNet to be a control level network? Can we bring Ethernet down to be a control level network? Could we bring ControlNet down to be a device level network? And I was put in the effort with that. Even whenever we agreed that ControlNet would be our control level network, it's done based on, you will do a study comparing and contrasting and see if we really need to support 3 different technologies. And that's where I did my Ethernet studies and demonstrated that Ethernet, an isolated Ethernet, could outperform any one of the control system network technologies we were using at the time. And so that became the effort, is how do we eliminate the need for different network technologies and collapse it just to device level networks and the information/control level networks? And where is the distinction there? And that then became an effort as, how do we do real-time control on Ethernet, and how do we integrate a real-time control Ethernet with the IT Ethernet networks?
Well, yeah. How much gnashing of teeth and you know, consternation was there between the groups that were involved in that, Gary?
I don't think there was it really was. If you thought your division would be the one the executive director would pick, you'd have fought it all the way. It really was. Everyone, I think, came together and seriously looked at, I mean, we were looking at 110 volts versus the 110 AC versus the 24 volt DC for all our sensors and actuators, because different divisions chose different standards there. So we agreed internationally, it sure looked like the 24 volt DC standard was the way to go. So everyone agreed to that. So that got all our sensors in line. We did that study we came up with, and DeviceNet. So everyone's going to do DeviceNet. We were primarily Rockwell-oriented in terms of our PLCs. We're primarily PLC-oriented. Mm-hmm. There was an investigation of PC-based controls, but the early ones, I do believe the biggest issue we ran into was the obsolescence, the rapid pace and speed of the personal computer industry. They just changed operating systems. They changed CPUs. They changed, it changed so rapidly, you could not, in the amount of time it takes to install, build, design, install a automotive factory, they'd be on to a new two or three levels of technology change.
You could not get
the spare replacement parts to maintain a system that you
put because
in.
You've got a 5+ year delta on, here's, we want to do this, and by the time it gets implemented in a plant, it takes
it's obsolete.
You look back at that time from roughly, let's say, the early 90s to that 10-year span from the early 90s to the mid-aughts, how fast those operating systems hardware standards changed. It's just ridiculous. I can't imagine, even to your point, I think you said 5+ years. I mean, most of this stuff you were designing for 10, 20 minimum. You see these things coming out every, 18 months, 24 months. My God, how do you do anything with that?
The industrial market versus the commercial market.
Yeah.
It's well understood. Well, PC-based controls was too much dependent upon the commercial market hardware, and that evolved so fast that and so one of the things I was investigating was Ethernet IP versus Profinet, and we were involved with a study at the University of Michigan on some prototype products and the performance and whatnot, and the difference between them was a fraction, a tiny fraction of a millisecond in terms of performance output. And so basically, Profinet, you can't route the real-time signal. Ethernet IP, it was routable because they used the UDP protocol to convey the control system traffic. So it was routable, and that's what led us to primarily pick Ethernet IP. It was almost a coin flip, but that seemed to be significant enough, and I believe it's proven out to be that's the case. So
I bring back a lot of memories around some of my early days stuff, which was later years, at least on the control side. But there was the out of the box in a lot of cases, even on the Ethernet IP side. Generally, those TTLs are set to a default of 1. So like out of the box, in a lot of cases, that traffic isn't routable unless you change it. But man, that bit us in some of the early designs where, we're expecting to be able to talk to Rockwell controller and ENBT card, not on the same, L3 segment. And it's like, why in the heck is the freaking traffic not getting over there? You pull an Ethereal trace, which is what it was at the time, up, and suddenly it's like, wait a minute, the TTL's coming out of 1. It's been generated as a 1. What the devil's the deal with that? But to your point, it's actually changeable, whereas it wasn't.
Now, we were talking about, I just wanted to build up. We were
talking about
convergence.
Yeah, right. Let's get back to that.
So the original, it wasn't overtime. I got explained that it was operational technology. And there's an element of truth to the idea of IT-OT technology convergence that was going on 10, 15 years ago. And that element of truth, because the reason the idea was proposed was to explain the culture gap between the IT organization and the OT organizations. And what's happening is the OT organizations are concerned with production, and they're concerned with real-time control. And the IT organizations are concerned with information technology transfer. And what happens is, yes, both organizations were looking at using switched Ethernet, but they're using it in completely and very vastly different ways. The OT organizations aren't concerned about anything other than the control traffic and the other traffic, but it's primarily the control system traffic for production purposes. And the IT organization was interested in globally getting information technology not only throughout the corporation, but between the, between corporations and your customers, between corporation and your suppliers. I mean, they are interested in routing globally, whereas a control system network, geez, the idea of the network is to replace a physical wire that you used to have those bundles of wires connecting all the different pieces of equipment. And now you wanted to replace that with a network. And you were dealing with the idea of a local area network and a true local area network. Whereas with IT, they're using the local area network to access the internet and access the wide area network. And so if you take a look at it, I mean, one of the huge differences is 90%+ of the traffic on an OT control network stays within the network. Whereas with an IT network, 90% of the local traffic is going to servers and the internet or another country, emails.
Yeah, off-net.
I mean,
off-net.
Exactly. And so it is really an access to the outside world is the way they were using switched Ethernet. And so it really wasn't, they were using the same technology, but they're using it in vastly different ways. And it helped explain why there was that divergence and whatnot. Well, all of a sudden it became so common that I noticed about 5 years ago, people started dropping technology and they stopped using it as an explanation for why there's a culture gap. And it became a proposed solution for resolving the culture gap. And now I think that's where we've gone too far. And it's time to stand up and say, it was a slightly flawed narrative when you try to use it as a solution to a legitimate issue. It becomes even more of a flawed narrative. And what you're trying to do is get IT and OT collaboration, not convergence.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great point, because I think we often misuse that collaboration versus convergence word. I think collaboration is better, because OT is going to still have to do what OT does, because you're making your money in OT. You're not making it in IT. You're producing product in the OT environment, and downtime, quite frankly, downtime is a killer. So
people are talking about convergence as a solution, what they start looking for is, what is that converged solution? And they're sitting here trying to eliminate the differences between them, because I'm going to a solution for both.
You're absolutely right.
Whenever you talk about collaboration, now what you recognize is you have legitimate needs, I have legitimate needs. How can we solve our joint needs? And you're not trying to sit here and, you know,
Who owns the data? Who owns the equipment? Who? I mean, you got that back and forth finger pointing contest. I mean, that is so crazy.
Well, and it just killed me. And one of my experiences is, I mean, we had an IT department that called themselves the real-time control group. And what they ended up being was the scheduling group. They were responsible for putting out a production schedule. And we would just laugh at them. They seemed to think that providing a schedule gave them a degree of control over what was actually happening on the plant floor. Now, you try to meet the schedule, but reality exists.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, you telling me to produce that whenever the machine is down, I ain't producing it. You don't control a damn thing.
Right. Your definitions around the difference between convergence and collaboration, man, I feel like we could have a whole separate podcast just on the cultural element. You touched on a number of things that I think are so critical. And that is, this is always a we, us. That's the reason you're having the discussions. It's not a one group or one process.
Oh, it's
or
not
one
an I
area.
Me. It's a we
right.
They. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a we us thing.
It's a we us. Yes. The competitor was Toyota, not my IT department.
Exactly. Wow. Well said.
Yes, spot on, Gary. And you know, John, I mean, just going back to like, you know, what we do on a daily basis, I literally want to almost, you know, maybe massage our talk track a little bit, because I don't think we do double click enough, to use one of our favorite colleagues' terms. I don't think we double click enough on making sure that we definition set what that, you know, because I think sometimes we started using convergence. I think now we're using partnership, which is better. But there's still, okay, great. You got, you know, both teams need to be talking, but double clicking a little bit more on exactly when we're doing this, we're talking about doing something on the technology side. What does that really look like? It's not about their standards or what they want or what they want. It's about figuring out the right thing for the company that is what you both want, and figuring
out.
My
needs. Here are your needs. How do we find a way to make those things work together? And if we can't, then let's agree that we can't.
Right.
And I don't think it's a we can't. I then extend and extrapolate this into the security arena, where IT is responsible for securing the integrity and the data and the trade secrets and whatnot. But if you take a look at the data that OT in a control system network is dealing with, they're dealing with control signal traffic. I mean, in the Ethernet IP specification, it's called implicit message traffic. Mm-hmm. It's an implicit message. And what, take a look at the definite, it's, I understand it, you understand it already. It's not context independent, and it doesn't have to be, you know, it's not shared throughout the world. And I think where we run into the biggest issue with security is now what we're trying to do is get contextualized data out of the control system networks. Now that has to be secured, but it cannot be done so. It can't be acquired, or it can't be acquired intelligently at the impact of the control signal traffic that has to go on independent of it.
Yeah, I mean, this is very much under, you know, and I think some manufacturers and some technology vendors do it different. But I'll pick on the, you know, the idea, because this is the first thing that popped into my mind. There is concepts of firewalls failing open or failing closed. And meaning that when, to your point, it impacts the controls traffic.
Which one's worse?
Traffic, right, exactly. Which one's worse? And in this case, in a lot of cases, it depends. This is the reason why security, you know, security in depth and the Swiss cheese model is so important, because having something down there that you can leverage, but putting it in a fail open scenario at the edge so that, you know, the number one care about is still keep the process running, keep the line running, keep the plant running, because that's still that number one care about.
Well, I got into several arguments with our security experts where they were saying, tell me what your problem is and we'll tell you the solution. And it's just kind of like, that's not good enough. I have to be guaranteed that your solution isn't worse than my problem. And frankly, at the time, my number one problem was IT sending virus protection software to the limited number of PCs on the plant floor. So how do you stop yourselves, please?
I have a story.
They did not appreciate being told that.
I'm sure not.
Back in about 20, this would have probably been, I have to get the dates right, sometime between probably 2010 and 2011, we're doing some line runoff validation testing. And we're running, not maybe at rate, but we're getting in a groove. It's all looking good. This was essentially during my old stomping grounds back in my Harley days, when we essentially deployed Ethernet to the factory floor 10 years after, you know, you guys did it, Gary. And I kid you not, I could see this rolling, I'm going to call it a rolling blackout. It started over at online and began moving across the factory. All these heartbeats were being lost. Heartbeat lost in that corner. Then it would move over here. Then it would move over here. And of course, everybody's like, what's going on? You know, the network. It's the network. So I'll cut the story short and say it was a security team doing port scanning, and the controllers simply couldn't handle it. It was overloading the comm side of the controllers and tipping the controllers over. To your point, it's like,
oh, yeah.
What do you remember afterwards? You don't remember all of the times they saved you. You remember the one time they took the plant down.
Mm-hmm. They insisted that we be able to route traffic up to where they could analyze it, as opposed to coming out to the plant floor and plugging into the equipment and analyzing it locally. And the idea, I found out about this feature that they were wanting to insist that the OT people implement by a 6-hour outage at the factory where they forgot to reset the port mirroring that was going on to troubleshoot. And that caused a traffic overload in a segment and caused the equipment to stop functioning. And it was just kind of like, and you expect me to put something in that has proven to halt production?
Yeah, that's you'll never live that down if you do.
Yes, there really is a culture gap. There's not an appreciation of the legitimate needs of each, and just because it's called Ethernet, there really is the ability to get a lot more data off the plant floor, but you have to do it in an intelligent and proper fashion, and you've got to prioritize the data. The control traffic must get through. I mean, that's the reason the network is out there when it's a control right. system network. And getting data off of that network is secondary and of distant secondary importance.
So I got a question for you along, since we're talking about the data on the factory floor. What's your perspective on AI and what do you think that's going to do for industry, and just your thoughts there?
I think, okay, AI requires contextualized data. That's the starting point. And so you're talking about non-real-time data. And mm-hmm. So as long as it is properly handled as non-real-time data, I don't have a problem with trying to get the data from the floor out to support the AI type. But right now, I think we're still a little we're not properly treating the we're just adding data thinking that bandwidth alone solves the problem. Oh, I'm going to go up to gigabit networks. No, you got to sit here and properly prioritize the data. You got to have the proper understanding of what data is needed and when it's needed when it impacts the control system networks. And that was always my perspective, was the control system. I have some real-time, hard real-time or soft real-time operation going on. Well, the contextualized data that you try to acquire from a system, put in a second network if you aren't sure that it is not going to impact the control system traffic and behaviors. And yeah, that was the one thing. I mean, Ethernet, it sits there. It works until it doesn't. I mean, it can have a lot of flaws and still function. It doesn't have to be healthy to function. It mm-hmm. tries to operate even whenever there's, but with control data, you have to be sure that under the worst possible circumstances. Monitor your control system network, make it healthy, and properly prioritize contextualized data. But it is, okay, if you get a busy signal, don't sit there and now try and push through. Find out why you got a busy signal.
Yeah, so don't brute force it. Yeah.
Right. Don't brute force it. So, Gary, you know, in your mind then, you wouldn't even start looking at leveraging AI to do any kind of real-time tweaking within the process. You essentially are like, look, let's leverage these models for looking at historical, let's look at to try and uncover insights that we didn't have before based on training it to better understand, pre-failure maintenance is needed scenarios and future preventive maintenance scenarios, but kind of keep it out of the control loop, is that use the controllers the way they have been. Don't try and think that, you can tweak any of this stuff live and that anybody can do it better than kind of we originally set it up for.
Well, and it sure seems like most of this, you're trying to get the data. What you're trying to do is improve the next product, not the current one. It's the control is working. You know, the control system knows about the one I just produced, the one I'm in the process of producing, and the very next one to be produced. And that is the historical nature of a control system network. And if you're trying to, if what you're trying to do is solve future production, improve future production, you're not dealing with real-time control in the control system scheme of things.
Yeah, got it. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, no worries. I was just going to say that what Dave and I often talk about with our teams, because everybody's talking about AI right now, us customers. And so we try to talk about, make sure you understand what the business needs are, the outcome you're trying to have before you say, let's put an AI strategy together, because you may not need one. Things may be fine today as things stand. And so we got to be really careful. That's a really slippery slope, in my personal opinion, on going too far down that path.
Yeah, don't do it really just because it's the buzzword, right? Don't do it just because everybody else is saying we need to do it because it's 12 of the 16 squares in the bingo card.
I start with, it requires contextualized data. And contextualized data is not control signal data.
Mm-hmm.
So properly intermix control signal data with contextualized data, and don't try to push it beyond that. If you start impacting your control signal traffic, you're going to regret it.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about it in that context. Here we're talking about contextualized data. I'm not going to say the word context, but I hadn't really thought of it that way, Gary. And I think your definition is brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, I'm picturing, to your point, John, I think of everything inside the control loop right now as control data, and that we might be under certain circumstances, maybe live tweaking that with some model that we deploy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yet what Gary's essentially saying is no, that's the control side of the controller, not the data that I'm sharing or that I'm leveraging to make a control system decision. That's still separate. Yeah. I'm with you, John. Kind of maybe mind blown a little bit there, is that I generally don't think of it that way. And we should. I think we should.
Absolutely. I love it, Gary. Thank you for that perspective. I really, really think that kind of sets my head in the right direction.
I want to go back to, I love history lessons, Gary. I love why certain decisions were made, why you did it one way versus another way, all those kinds of things. So I want to go back to the kind of your anti-Ethernet days for a little bit and kind of sort of the flip. Was there a specific thing, the suddenly 100 megabit interfaces, just the fact that suddenly we didn't have shared mediums anymore. So the collision sense multiple access part kind of went away once the switch came about. What was the thing that pushed it from there is no freaking way it belongs in my control systems on the factory floor, and wow, it's cheap, fast, and pretty good?
It is a collision-free Ethernet environment.
That was the thing.
But Ethernet was defined by its collision behavior. Collisions were an inherent fundamental
Absolutely.
Part of the early Ethernet.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And the behavior defined the performance. And the performance, just as traffic increased, the performance peaked, then dropped off. And it was, right whenever you need the network the most, everyone's screaming for alarms,
right.
And no traffic gets through.
Right, right. Yeah.
Establishing a collision-free environment, because that was the behavior that was so objectionable, and that required switched full duplexed Ethernet.
Yeah, so that was the big thing. What, Gary, do you remember some of your like the old test days? I'd love to hear some history of the testing. What you brought in, what worked, what didn't, what blew your mind, any kind of war stories from kind of that.
And I got a question around that. I mean, was this done in the lean lab at GM, or did you do real world plant stuff, or a little bit of both?
It certainly was a lot of both. We would test it in the lab, then we would pilot test it, and then we would test again for endurance and durability. So stress test it, and then we would pilot it. And after a successful 6-month pilot, it was deemed ready for production purposes. So an awful lot of that was done. I did my earliest testing on using shared Ethernet because the switches were so expensive back then. But it was done in the realization that switches were coming and the cost curve was going to make switches be cost comparable to the shared media hubs. So I emulated the performance of a switch network on a shared media isolated network, just assured that there was no background traffic and didn't tie it into the outside world. It was exclusively the control system traffic on there. Then we went and we added all sorts of traffic and found that under our operating conditions, we got better performance on a isolated Ethernet network than we did under the, it was RIO at the time, the token passing network that was the virtually 90% of the vehicle production we were doing was utilizing. And so demonstrating that under the worst possible conditions we could conceive of traffic being on that particular segment, Ethernet always outperformed. And then we proceeded to go about and do the same thing with versus Ethernet versus DeviceNet. Then we did Ethernet versus ControlNet. And with the Ethernet IP implementations and the performance tests that we were doing demonstrated now you had a real issue back then that people had to properly implement the TCP/IP protocols. So some of the testing we did with the PC-based controllers, you would find the PC-based controllers where the control algorithm was executing under the real-time kernel of the real-time operating system on the PC, but the Ethernet communication was running under a shell of the DOS or commercial operating system. So the real-time operating system was time slicing and the Ethernet was on a low priority. And so you'd be trying to get
Oh,
control
yeah.
traffic out of a controller and it would get time sliced out and parsed. And so you'd get unacceptable behavior. So that was the it you needed to make sure your TCP/IP protocol stack was properly implemented. So we came up with some performance tests with that, and we actually shared our performance test methodology with the ODVA organization, the owners of the Ethernet IP spec, to make sure that they would perform those type of tests whenever they were validating Ethernet IP implementations, that the transport and network layers of the protocol were controlled by a real-time operating system kernel that was given appropriate priority.
Yeah, I
So
mean
was that back in the FlowPro days, Gary, or was that after that?
that was slightly after the FroPro days.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that from my time at GE FANUC and our cooperation with them at GM Powertrain. So.
Yeah, I mean the flip to switching in hardware from just software-based switching did so much for that because suddenly you could essentially guarantee that there was space in that frame buffer, in that packet buffer. Even if the switch was busy doing something else with its CPU cycles, you were guaranteed that You know, it would switch first and then do everything else later. And man, that helped it. You know, talk about the importance of determinism.
It certainly was. It certainly was. I mean, way back then, I mean, we were doing some, and some of the switches weren't non-blocking switches. I mean, you had the switch itself could get overloaded in the early days of switching.
Absolutely.
And so you had to make sure that the hardware you were purchasing for an industrial grade switch was of line speed non-blocking.
I remember
technology
that.
Was being used.
Yep. Well, if you can believe this, Gary, we are heading to the end of our hour. I don't have any idea how we're already here. So
I know, right?
I'm crazy, right, John? Would love to wrap. So I just got kind of a question, Gary, and that is, if you had, I don't know, the top three things, you think about your, would you say, 48-year career in the business, you learned so much, you put a bunch of it in a book, you brought a bunch of it up earlier on the podcast here. What are like the three things people, like if you listen to me and you learn these three things, your life in this space will be easier. What are those three things?
I am a reformed, and if you're not looking at Ethernet for your control system networks, you're missing the boat. You got to properly segment your Ethernet networks. Security is paramount today. I mean, look at Ethernet, make sure it's secure, and don't be quite as hard on your IT people as I was.
I love it.
Gary, well, your ally, so, not your.
Yeah, thank you so much, sir. That was just great. Love the time. It disappeared in a flash, sir.
All right. Well, I'd be interested to hear how it comes across.
Yeah, same. Thanks, everybody, for listening in today. Had a great, great exchange with Gary. So this is John Marchando signing off, saying goodbye. See you on the next one.